This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with industry experts and SG2 thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we all expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
Now's the time to really think about changing the system of care for behavioral health. We have an opportunity to redefine how patients use the system of care. It's a really good time to take hold of that, to be deliberate about making those changes. And that could actually have long-term implications for what we would expect to see in the ED moving forward and in the inpatient unit as well.
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host, Kelly Richard, and today we will be talking about COVID-19's impact on behavioral health, from the way in which it has exacerbated mental health and substance abuse issues to care delivery to the effects on the healthcare workforce. We'll be talking to our very own set of behavioral health experts, Jamie Zage and Stephanie Snyder. Thank you both for joining me.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Let's get started with some data. The two of you develop our behavioral health impact of change forecast each year. And I know this year was an area of growth for need, not for profitability. But how has COVID-19 impacted the short and long-term demand for behavioral health services?
That's an important question. I think COVID has really impacted every service line, and behavioral health is certainly no exception. I've heard behavioral health is called the epidemic inside the pandemic, and I certainly couldn't agree more with that. Frankly, mental health has been an epidemic for a long time, and the pandemic has just exacerbated that. So in terms of our forecast at SG2, we certainly talk to a lot of clients, and what we've heard is that inpatient volumes have declined, which is what you would expect. But there are certainly just those patients who still need help, whether or not COVID is happening or not happening. They need to be inpatient. So there's still going to be need. If we're looking at outpatient mental health, we saw an initial large drop, particularly in outpatient psychotherapy or counseling services. But that actually rebounded pretty nicely thanks to virtual health that impacted behavioral health quite substantially. And we had a nice pickup in volume. A lot of our SG2 clients even picked right back up to 100% in some markets.
Yeah, I think we could all use someone to talk to these days. So that doesn't surprise me one little bit.
Right? Isn't that the truth? Behavioral health is one of those things that impacts everybody. I don't care what color you are, what economic background you come from, if you're male or female, this pandemic has impacted everybody's mental health.
And I know some of the data that you and I have both seen is related to the number of people reporting that they have anxiety, depression, and mental health issues. And a study out of the Kaiser Foundation showed almost a complete doubling of the number of people reporting some type of mental health issue during the pandemic. And that's a lot of what's going to drive that rebound that you just mentioned as well.
If we're talking also about outpatient mental health, where I live here in Richmond, Virginia, there are practices in counseling that right on their webpage, it says, you know, in a nice way, please don't call us. We don't have any spots. They are full. And of course, there's substance abuse, right? There's a huge surge in demand happening right now. I saw yesterday a news article that said in the state of South Carolina, they have seen a 50% increase in the number of opioid overdose responses this year, and they are attributing that strictly to COVID.
Wow, that's pretty stunning.
It's stunning. It's sad. But isolation really messes with our internal thought processes, and it keeps us away from our social supports. It also means, you know, if you're in recovery, you can't see your AA or NA sponsor. You can't see those folks that you've grown to rely on that keep you sober. You can't get the medication to help reduce your cravings.
So meeting behavioral health needs prior to the pandemic was already really difficult. You mentioned access to providers, and it was already tough back then, lack of inpatient beds, scarcity of substance abuse treatment resources. How have the challenges evolved because of COVID-19?
In terms of the volumes being down on the inpatient side, we certainly see volumes down in the emergency department. And some of that is very deliberate for inpatient units to a certain degree, right? It was initially about safety. We've got a lot of inpatient programs that are still in semi-private rooms. And sometimes there's reasons for that. It can be therapeutic to have a roommate. The need to socially distance patients and keep patients safe and keep the risk of spreading any infection down meant that they had to convert those semi-private rooms to private rooms. So you're in a lot of cases essentially cutting your capacity in half on the inpatient side. So that's certainly been a challenge, but one that was necessary to maintain safety. And admittedly, I haven't seen a lot of outbreaks in inpatient psych units. So that's a good thing. The other piece, and I think you mentioned this, you alluded to this, we've got a high unemployment. We've got a lot of people losing their insurance. That changes the dynamic in how patients have to access services. Individuals who are on Medicaid typically have to go through their community mental health providers, or if they don't have insurance at all, as opposed to going through your health system providers. Those usually require either the ability to pay by yourself or have commercial insurance or both. So that certainly changes the types of providers or the types of services that patients can access. So that challenge remains. And as Stephanie alluded to, the demand is up because there's an increase in need and a lot of providers are really full. The reality, though, is that we've been able to make a real positive shift towards doing a lot of things virtually. And that is a change that is a welcome one. We've talked to a number of organizations who said they were either in the process of starting to roll out some telepsychiatry, some telepsychology, and had some plans in place, or some that already had some services and were building, but everybody had to make that switch. One organization who told us they went from almost nothing to nearly 100% of their outpatient services being virtual. And that virtual access piece has been critical for behavioral health providers. And whether it's the telepsychiatry visit with the psychiatrist, whether it's a psychotherapy visit with a psychologist, licensed social worker, or it could even be partial hospitalization or intensive outpatient, which are group visits, we're seeing those also being developed and delivered virtually, just because we need to get patients access to services. And that brings me back to the emergency department. And one of the things that we've seen is almost a 50% drop in emergency department visits in some markets. And that drop represents both a deliberate attempt by organizations to keep patients out of the ED, especially some of those high utilizers. So using things like targeted case managers to really proactively work with those individuals to steer them to other types of services like partial, like call lines, like just getting into outpatient services in general. Some of it, though, is consumer reticence. And that's the piece that as consumers take this opportunity to look differently at the system of care, we might be able to make changes there in the future. We have an opportunity to redefine how patients use the system of care, where they enter. The ED doesn't need to be the front door for a lot of the care that they receive. And right now, they're learning to use call centers, learning to call their physicians, to seek other avenues to get services rather than coming to the ED. It's a really good time to take hold of that, to be deliberate about making those changes. And that could actually have long-term implications for what we would expect to see in the ED moving forward and in the inpatient unit as well. So I encourage our members or those listening to think about what they could be doing to secure some of those changes as long-term changes.
Another key challenge that we're seeing here, in addition to the way that we're delivering care in the ways that you kind of walk through and some of those great solutions, if those are being provided, how are they getting paid for? You did mention a little bit about the decrease in employer-sponsored insurance that we're seeing as a result of unemployment. Do you see the reimbursement for these services changing at all? Does the virtual parity make a difference?
Yeah, the virtual parity is the one big positive that's come out of this from a payment perspective. There's certainly some regulatory relaxation, right? Stephanie mentioned the medication-assisted treatment, and there was an early CMS waiver to enable more patients to access a more virtual care pathway for medication-assisted treatment. So a lot more of their visits being virtual than in person. And that was, again, in response to just safety of staff and patients. The actual reimbursement piece is largely the same overall. And there's a couple of things that maybe compound it. There's early reports, and I think there are going to be some providers even today still in some markets who haven't been able to more fully embrace virtual services, who might just be using the telephone. And there is some reimbursement for that now, again, under the waiver, but the ability to get that full reimbursement that you were getting for all of your outpatient services might be challenged based on the market that you're in. The other thing that we're starting to see is that Medicaid dollars are a little bit at risk right now. Just yesterday, I was reading how the administration has started to put off some of the ACA dollars, right? They're taking away some of the federal subsidies to the Medicaid expansion, but now states are strapped, right? They don't have funds. They're in deficit themselves because of COVID-19. And so the fear is that they're going to start to really diminish Medicaid services or Medicaid payment rates as a result, because their budgets are so strapped as well.
Yeah, I spend a lot of my time focusing on value-based care, and there is some indication of a greater shift to value as a result of COVID-19. How do you see that potentially impacting behavioral health reimbursement?
I don't know that it necessarily impacts reimbursement. It's a really good question, Kelly, because value-based care is probably one of the biggest drivers of investment in behavioral health services. And it's not because you get reimbursed more in that space, but because you're looking at the total cost of care and what you're achieving is cost avoidance. That's where the value piece comes in. When you improve the mental health of a community, of a population, you also affect and improve the overall health of that population. And in doing so, that's how you really have an impact. So I'm going to give you a real specific example. Then we'll talk about cardiac and diabetes patients, some chronic diseases. Patients who have comorbid mental health conditions, there's data to show, first of all, that the total cost of care, sort of the per member per month type cost or per year per member costs, are 2.5 to 3.5 times higher. And that's a lot of Medicaid data that drives into that. And underlying that are a couple of different things. Individuals who have a comorbid depression, anxiety, mental health disorder are much less likely to be compliant with their medication, which can lead to increased utilization. When they are admitted, their length of stay can be longer. We know for heart attack patients in particular that their recovery is slower if they have a comorbid depression. Readmissions are higher in patients who have mental health issues as well as those chronic diseases. So all of those things add up to a lot of cost, which for those organizations who are still in a fee-for-service market, right, there's even some value in thinking about reducing some of that as well, right? Readmission rates are something you get penalized for. But it's all of those factors that we think about in that total cost of care that is really why those who are in value-based care, population health, those who've taken on risk, are much more likely to invest, in particular in those ambulatory services.
Sure, that makes sense, just in terms of having additional tools in their toolbox to help manage that population. We talked about the impact on patients. I want to shift here a little bit. What about the impact on frontline providers? How can health systems support the behavioral health needs of their employees in this really difficult time?
That's one of the interesting things that's really come out of this pandemic is the impact that we've seen on providers. I think it's something that's really been there all along. It's just been really exacerbated lately because the stress has been magnified, right? Especially for those folks in the ED or the ICU or those more intense units. What we've seen in talking with our SG2 clients is a couple of different things. We've had a client or two who have been using an online platform. It's actually an online CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. And this online platform is called SilverCloud. And what it does is it provides therapy through your phone or a computer to your frontline staff. And it's available in the office, in your work. You can take a quiet minute in your car or in the office that's down the hall, and you can talk to a mental health provider right there. Another option that is effectively the same idea, but as we mentioned, some of the behavioral health staff might have had a dip in the number of patients they're seeing, especially back in March or April, right? There was a huge dip. And we talked to one hospital who was actually using their own staff to treat the other staff. So they had a psychiatrist who was roaming the different units, and she was in the ED. She was in the ICU, and she was making herself available. If she saw that somebody was having a tough moment or having a tough day, she would make herself available for them. So that was very, what I would call real time, very actionable. Just having a real impact on providers is important. Those are the folks that we need. We need them to be mentally healthy and available.
Great. Those are fantastic examples. Just to sort of wrap up, it seems as though we're hearing that many of the issues that we had previously are being exacerbated as a result of both the economy and of the pandemic itself. However, we seem to have health systems that are doing some really creative things to both see patients and take care of their staff. Well, thank you, Jamie and Stephanie, both for joining me today. Thanks for listening, and please subscribe or follow if you want to hear more. I also want to recommend another Vizient podcast, The Modern Practice. It is on Vizient's medical leadership channel, and it provides a clinical perspective into current issues affecting healthcare today.
This has been another great episode of SG2 Perspectives, where industry experts and SG2 thought leaders explore the drivers of tomorrow's healthcare strategies to inform today's decision makers. Contact us anytime by sending an email to sg2perspectives@sg2.com. We'd love to hear from you. SG2 revolutionized healthcare demand forecasting with the Impact of Change forecast, and today, we're the industry's premier strategy advisory firm. To learn more, visit sg2.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.